Hello, everybody. Welcome back to There Is No Offseason. It's BP's only Daily Dynasty podcast, and we're a proud member of the BP Podcast Network. If you have a second to shoot us an email, give us a rating or review in any of the places that you're listening to this, if that is so supported, please do so. TinoPodcast@gmail.com, at TinoPodcast on Twitter, or Patreon.com/TinoPodcast. We're still looking for a few more Patreon subscribers so we can start our super weird league that is yet to be determined with rules, but it should be super weird and super fun. I'm Mark Berry. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and with me as always, fresh from the IL, the fantasy editor at BP. I'm sorry. I'm just hearing that he's going back on that. Yeah, he's going back on the IL. It's JP Breen. JP, what's up, buddy?
Got troublesome back, man.
Yeah.
Oh. Good thing we got the 10-day IL so I can just take a quick break, come back, realize that I'm not actually ready yet.
Yeah, get right back on it. Look, it seems like there's a lot of guys headed that way. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. Bryce Harper just went on the IL. A player of the same stature, clearly, Kyle Gibson, just went on the IL. It's getting a little bit crazy out there in our leagues, just to field a competitive roster, or a full roster. Yeah. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's tough. And I mean, in some respect, right, part of this is it's still early in the season, so you got to just kind of manage what you don't want to be a long-term injury that's going to be affecting things going down the road. Mm-hmm. But we're also still looking at a situation now that, yes, I think it's certainly influenced by the pandemic. I don't think there's any way to get around that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I do wonder how much of the IL being 10 days has really, you know, there's a difference between saying, oh, you're going to be without somebody for 3 weeks versus you're going to be without somebody for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, right now you're like, well, if I'm going to miss somebody for like 3 days, I might as well put them on the 10-day IL because I can then bring somebody up for that 3-day stint. And before it was like, I don't want to be without Bryce Harper, or I don't want to be without, you know, Christian Yelich was dealing with a back injury, and then you had Mike Moustakas dealing with a heel injury, all of those. And even Nelson Cruz, in some respect, too, has been missing some time, and they were unwilling to put him on the IL. And but, like, there's a difference between, you know, Moustakas eventually landed on it, Yelich eventually landed on it, and it's like, if you're going to miss him for 3 or 4 days, you might as well just go with the 10-day IL. There's a difference when it gets up to the 15-day DL that it used to be, where you're like, you know, if I can avoid the whole 3-week thing, you know, I know 15 days is not quite 3 weeks, but it's more than 2 weeks. And so you do get into this weird spot that I think the 10-day IL gives more flexibility, and I think that's important, but I do think it makes it easier for teams to just put guys on the IL.
Yeah, and it seems like with pitchers especially.
That 100%.
It's almost just, you know, you're skipping him one time through,
yep,
ostensibly. So it's an easy way to sort of mess with some of those inning limits for young guys. But the rash of just all injuries has been, and like you mentioned, not even the COVID-19 IL, which is an indefinite sort of timeline. It just seems like everyone's fantasy bench is loaded up with red flags or suitcases or whatever your injury designation is for whatever format you use. Mm-hmm. I want to bring it up because Darius Austin wrote a piece today about what should fantasy leagues do with the influx in injuries and IL stints. And we've also have a new inclusion to the site, the IL Ledger, which sort of groups different various injuries by body part, by time missed. It's a really cool tool that you can kind of mess around with if you have a minute over at BP. It's up now. So we had a question about this in one of our leagues. about how many IL spots should be available and how what happens if we increase or even have unlimited IL spots and how that saps the waiver wire. And it's interesting because you shouldn't really get penalized for having too many guys on the IL, but at the same time, that just is part of it, and I don't know where that line is. And Darius does a good job talking about it in his piece, but I wanted to see if you had any thoughts about it.
Yeah, he did a really nice job, and I ultimately agree with him where, you know, his argument is no matter what you choose, there's a downside to it.
Yeah.
And there's something that you have to deal with in terms of potentially cutting players that you don't want to cut if you need the roster spot. But my take on it is it very much depends on whether you're playing in a redraft or a dynasty league.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the dynasty league piece of it is, you know, unless you're one of... I'll just take TDGX, for example, just because we've mentioned it a bunch on this here podcast that we do. And it's like there's three teams competing?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I'm like, well, I got a bunch of people on the IL. Well, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't really competing anyway. In some respects, having more IL spots is better for rebuilding teams, actually. Right? Because you can just float a lot of people on the IL. You can take a shot and have more roster spaces for more players. You can load up with more prospects. That really becomes a situation in which the waiver wire becomes pretty bad. And it becomes a tough situation pretty quickly, especially because it's a weekly lineup league. The daily lineup leagues is so hard. I do think that our points league has struck a nice balance with limiting how many moves you can make in any given week. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a really nice addition to it, because it allows you to kind of chop and change as you go along, but at the same time you can't just like unlimitedly stream a bunch of people. Or if you're like me, you've been trying to stream a couple of starters each week and then you've been like picking the wrong ones and just absolutely having blowups, and that's been stellar. I think I had like a negative 38 point start from Chris Flexen, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's a tough one to bounce back from.
But you just kind of go into this area where it feels like we're trying to do, you know, sorry, I'm just trying to get my thoughts together on it because it feels to me like fantasy is trying to, and this is beyond injuries. It has to do with the saves. It has to do with saves and holds. It has to do with rates. It has to do with, you know, some people trying to get rid of stolen bases, preferring on base percentage, all of these things. What it's trying to do is eliminate luck.
Mm-hmm.
And in some respects, the game that we're always playing when it comes to redraft fantasy or it comes to dynasty is luck plays into it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And
larger than any of us would like to admit, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we get into this spot where it seems to me that we get into the IL discussion about how we fix the things because we want to be able to eliminate bad fortune for any fantasy owner. And sometimes, you know, unfortunately, you just get snake bitten by injuries.
Yeah.
And that's the same as any other team. Right? Like in real life baseball, like sometimes you just get absolutely loaded up with injuries and it sucks. Sometimes you're out there and you're Liverpool and you're playing with your seventh string center back and everybody says, well, look, your defense isn't that good. And you're like, well, they're playing an 18-year-old who was playing in the fifth tier like a year ago, right? Like,
yeah,
it's like,
or well, the Cleveland baseball team who was projected to be like 115, 120 win team heading into this season and then just kind of got a little snake bitten by having bad players, you know?
I think if I remember Pecota, I think it was at least 120 wins.
Yeah.
But so I recoil Pecota, a little bit.
Pecota, notoriously conservative, projected them to have more wins in the regular season than any team ever, which, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I wouldn't quote us on that. But we're just, you know, we're going straight off the dome on this one, right?
Right.
It's hard to, we're not fact checking, but it feels right.
Yeah. And, facts.
And so I do get into the spot where I was like, I think that Darius hit it right. It's about where do you want the challenge to be? Mm-hmm. And where and how do you want the game to kind of like, to kind of work out? Because I think what ends up happening is everybody wants this perfect fix where you can't, you can kind of overcome your bad luck, or you can just like not have your season torpedoed by bad luck when it comes to injuries. And I think that's impossible. It's just trying to figure out where you want to be able to have the challenges in your league lie, whether it's about kind of having a fallow, like just you loathe having to look at the free agent list because it's going to mm-hmm. be brutal.
Yeah.
Or do you want to deal with the fact that you have to make hard roster decisions and potentially cut people you don't want to cut? I don't know where you lay on that, but I think that's the right way to think about it.
No, I don't. I mean, we've been dancing around it the whole time. I don't think there's a good way to handle it. Like, it's just something like, obviously if we could be in a video game and turn off injuries, that would be awesome.
I mean, but, like as Darius said, right, for the health of the players, more importantly, uh-huh. right?
Like, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That'd be great. Like,
yeah,
we get to see the best players play all the time without really restrictions. And that would be the best for all of us. But there's not really a good way to go about it. So I do think you have to make some tweaks around the edges. One of his suggestions that I thought was kind of interesting was to change the in-season positional requirements. Positional eligibility. I thought that was an interesting way. It would basically give you more multi-positional eligible guys. So you would be able to plug and play with guys on your bench that might be limited to one position, but could have two or three without getting that requirement with whatever lofty number it is for the regular season. Somebody even in the comments said that if a player appears at a position once, then they have eligibility for the season. But for the next season, it's still like the 20 games you have to have to qualify, which I thought was interesting. And it would kind of make for some fun injury distinctions, or not injury distinctions, positional distinctions. I don't know if I would go with one, but I did think that was an interesting way to tweak and to free up some spots for multi-positional guys, or to create more multi-positional guys.
Yeah, I mean, being the fantasy editor, my brain immediately went to being like, oh god, our fantasy position would just be miserable. Like, our preseason
prediction. No, that would be the same, because then you keep the position to position, or you keep the season to season, but like, in season, it's shorter.
Oh, I see, that's interesting. I had, see, because I had thought about, like, whether it would just be interesting to kind of do away with the idea of positions and bench spots, mm-hmm. and it's just like...
So, like a best ball?
Yeah, well, not, it just takes everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone on your team just gets kind of lumped into it, and I understand why that's kind of unpalatable in certain cases, because you're like, I'd like to be able to roster certain people but not have to play them in bad matchups. I don't want to mm-hmm. have to deal with the fact that their seasonal lines are going to kind of go up no matter what. And you know, my response to that is like, if you don't like a matchup, maybe then you're going to have to cut them.
Yeah.
It depends on how much you want to deal with it. Obviously, there's going to be no bad situation. There's also the best ball theory, right, where you're just like, it's going to pull whichever player from your bench had the best day. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like doing the in-game lineup optimization, which might be able to kind of deal with some of the injury issues. I don't love that, because again, it tries to like, it eliminates a lot of the luck factor, which I think right. is actually really nice in the game.
Yeah. I mean, and the year that Leicester won the Premier League, they were a really good team. But
yeah.
you don't go from that level to winning the championship without catching a few breaks. And if they hadn't caught some breaks, then we wouldn't have got that, like, one of the coolest stories maybe in sports in the last 25 years.
Yeah, so absolutely.
You have to... Luck is such a prominent factor, and it's just always there to some extent. Like, it would be a shame to kind of get rid of that.
Yeah, and I think that Dynasty has a little bit of... has a little bit more kind of wiggle room. I did mm-hmm. wonder if, like, in Dynasty, maybe we just get rid of some of the Major League, Minor League distinctions, and you just get 40 mm-hmm. spots, and you fill them however you want.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Because I do, but at the same time, I do think some players get thrown back into the free agent mix because of that kind of major league, minor league roster crunch. Yeah. So in some respects, I kind of am thinking about, I kind of liked the multiple roster lock as well that Darius was talking about. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think it's a problem with fantasy. I think it's a problem with baseball. And I don't think that fantasy can solve a problem that is just being driven by the way that the baseball rules work.
Yeah. So I think that we would be getting into a whole different territory if we were trying to figure out how to optimize baseball. So maybe we should move on just so we don't get too in the weeds and we can actually talk about some fantasy stuff.
Yeah, it sounds good.
So I wanted to hit on a few guys that we've either liked or were struggling, or sort of like our old two to watch segment where we're just picking a handful of people to talk about for no reason. And this is more of, let's take the temperature on a few guys that we're interested in right at this point in the season. And you mentioned before we started recording that you wanted to talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the context of prospects, in the context of linear development, all that good stuff. Vlad is, I hesitate to even say on fire, because this just might be status quo for him moving forward. So I don't want to like limit what he can do, but he's been awesome to start the season. First 46 games, he has 201 plate appearances, hitting .333, .443, .661, 15 home runs. He even stole a base just because, you know, YOLO. Tell me what you think is so impressive, or what you think the takeaway is from Vlad's early season success.
Well, I think my largest takeaway is, like, this is Juan Soto-esque. Right? Like, I mean, in terms of walking more than he's striking out, the ability to hit for a good average, he's hitting for power, he's like, you kind of slice and dice the numbers and you're like, well, I mean, that's all really good. Yeah, I mean, I guess so, I'd like it if he ran a little bit more, but that seems to be picky, right?
So I just pulled up on StatCast the top five average exit velocities, and I know that we talk about this as, I don't know how predictive it is, but
yeah,
you can, it also tells you who hits the shit out of the ball, for lack of a better term.
Or who has. Yeah.
So four of the top five: Aaron Judge, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., Franmil Reyes. Those all make sense. Would you have any idea who else is in the top five? And this is a qualified batted ball event, so it's somebody that does play a lot.
I mean, what I'm going to do is kind of go with somebody else who has been incredible that I've wanted to dive into a little bit more, and I'll say Jesse Winker.
Evan Longoria is...
Oh, sure.
Two.
He's been really good.
Yeah.
Or at least, I think he was... Is he hurt too? I can't keep track of his hurt. Yeah.
Jesse Winker's number 16. Your boy Matt Olson's number 10.
Yeah. I offered to talk about Matt Olson. You said no. So I wanted to talk about Vladimir Guerrero for a couple of different reasons, because in, you know, it's hard. He's what, in his third full season? It's hard to just think about the fact that he's just 22 years old. And we were getting into this space over the last couple of years in terms of reading scouting reports, seeing the fact that people were putting an 8 on his potential hit tool, people saying that he was going to be an absolutely generational hitter. And to come in and see that he hit, you know, between 260, 275, didn't have a nice over 200 for his first two big league seasons. And everybody was like, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, it's useful, but it's not what we were sold. And everyone was like, you know, are we looking at somebody who doesn't really get the ball in the air enough? He's just kind of a better overall hitter than anything else, and we're looking at somebody who might hit 20 homers, you know, hit 280 and be a good, solid, you know, you hope he can play third base, but if he plays first base, it's a little bit sad. And then this year he comes out and he goes, oh, by the way, no, I am that good.
Yeah.
Don't you worry. But Dynasty...
Hey, I just decided to be one of the three best hitters in baseball. So
yeah, I mean,
I'm going to start doing that now.
It's like a year after Tatis did the same thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it was just all of a sudden leveled up. And the thing about Guerrero was Dynasty owners were starting to get a little bit sour. Not necessarily that people were looking to sell, but that, you know, if you started to ask people, do you want Guerrero Jr. or do you want Wander Franco? I'll bet you would have had a discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our Roto League, Wander Franco went well ahead of Vladimir Guerrero in the startup draft. And by well ahead, I mean like 10 spots maybe in the first round.
And like, to be fair, part of that was kind of roster construction strategy, mm-hmm. right? Going prospects over big leaguers. But you're still right, you know? And in redraft, we saw Mike Gianella for the past 2 years kind of saying, you know, Vladimir Guerrero, you're paying for potential. You're not paying for what he is. And he was just always saying, like, kind of got to pump the brakes on this. We'd like to actually see some of this be real before you're actually going to pay for it in redraft. And that's obviously different than Dynasty. And you know what? For 2 years, Mike was spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And now in 2021, it looks like, well, if you followed what Mike was going to say, you missed out on a potential superstar. And it's thinking about how to balance that a little bit and maybe thinking about how, A, difficult it is to kind of translate to the big leagues. And I'm actually going to probably ask Mike to write about it because I'd mm-hmm. be really interested to hear what his thoughts are, because I think that he would have, if I was kind of thinking about what Mike would say, is he would say that, yeah, I thought this was always a possibility. It's just mm-hmm. about, do you want to pay for it?
Right.
And is it smart to pay for it? Because there's no real reason that it should have happened in 2021 versus 2020. Or there's no real reason it should have happened in 2021 versus 2022. And it's about trying to manage your opportunity costs. But at the same time, you're like, if you took Guerrero in like the third round or the fourth round of a redraft league, I mean, you might be getting first round talent now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering in terms of two different things. Number one, how are you feeling about Guerrero in terms of like overall dynasty value? And who is somebody else that you feel like people are kind of souring on because they weren't as good as we were expecting right away, but still has this breakout potential?
Okay, so I don't know if I necessarily dropped him too much in a like personal mm-hmm. dynasty rankings, but I did my patience was thinner than it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, for reasons that, like Mike said, where it's like, okay, we heard generational bat, we heard all of these things being tossed around. At a certain level, you're gonna have to do it, you know. I think that for right now, he's, if not top five, definitely top 10 as mm-hmm. a dynasty hitter. And I think that I agree with Mike, but I also would have been more likely to draft Vlad than Mike, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Everything Mike says, and Mike is just a very value-oriented player,
it's his strength.
Yeah, and he's why he's so good at it, and he's able to detach but what ifs from a lot of his decision making. And I will still say what if on guys, and sometimes that is helpful, and sometimes it is super not. We won't like name names or go into any of my, oh yeah, but what if he could be good? Because there have been a lot that just didn't work out. But I still blend the two a little bit blend the value, blend the stats with just personal preference. And sometimes it's, sometimes it isn't even as much as, oh, he can be good. It's, I really like this guy and want him to be on my fantasy team because I think he mm-hmm. could be good and I think he's fun. Mm-hmm. So it's not an exact science for me when maybe it should be, but so I have Vlad in the top. I would say the stolen bases knock, like, ding him a little. So if he's anywhere like 7, 8, 9, maybe around like the Jose Ramirez or Cody Bellinger, or like, although Bellinger's been, his injury stuff has been pretty scary. So I would have Vlad in that range as a top 10 ish guy. So to answer your second question.
Well, sorry, I'm just going to interrupt you for one one quick question. Let's say he keeps up on this pace throughout the entire year. Let's say he hits, I mean, maybe he doesn't hit, like, you know, 50 homers, but you know, let's say he hits 35. Mm-hmm. But walk rate's still there. K rate's still where it is. Still hitting over 300. Walk rate's still incredible. He's being able to get runs in RBI because of where he's hitting in a good lineup. Is that not basically Juan Soto, or are you looking like, I need to see that over the course of the year? Is it the fact that Juan Soto is willing to steal a couple of bases, or is it positional difference, or how are you feeling about it?
I think some of it is positional.
Okay.
Positional.
But at the same time, right, let's say he gets third base eligibility. I mean, he still has played third base once this year.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer him to be at first base than third base, to be honest. I think that there's more talent at third base than first base. But if you're talking about if he finishes the year like this, that's almost that 2015 MVP Bryce Harper season.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a little bit less power, but it's on par with that. So I think that he bumps up significantly. I think he would be maybe... he would be a top. You could even, like, I'm stuttering because of what I'm about to say. You could even put him in that four spot, maybe behind Soto, Acuna, Tatis, and then maybe he's ahead of Trout then in dynasty rankings, and that is insane because I don't know if I've ever said that about somebody before.
Yeah. Well, and so right now it's just the fact that you want to see it for more than 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't remember what my second question was, but...
It was, who do you think could bump up?
Yeah.
So that pretty much segues us into some other guys on this list that I wanted to talk about as far as recalibrating. And bring up our good, close, personal friend... in fantasy, so not like in real life or anything, but Joe Adell.
Well, I mean, you live in... You're close enough to Joe Adell that he might be your close personal friend.
Yeah, I think that he would enjoy... Actually, I don't know if I would be, like, cool enough to hang out with Joe Adell, but...
Just wear your top t-shirt. You'd be awesome.
Or wear one of my local market, my Edgar Allan Poe Baltimore Orioles hat.
Those hats are crazy. Every single time I look at them, I see something new that is just atrocious.
So Joe Adell started out this season striking out an absolute ton and hitting a few home runs, but almost literally doing nothing else. He's picked it up a little bit recently, so he's now only striking out a third of the time, which is still kind of alarming. But he has 10 home runs in his first 17 games and has bumped up his batting average to 270. So he's getting in range of, all right, well, Joe Adell is mashing again. Now we should maybe keep an eye on him as somebody to watch for a potential stint in LA this summer or in Orange County this summer. I'm still a little bit concerned with the swing and miss. But sure. he does seem like the bloom is way off the Joe Adell rose, I think, in dynasty, like redraft, like forget about redraft. He's been picked up and dropped in redraft leagues of mine all season long, and I think is predominantly on The Wire. So I think he would fit into this category of he was the top overall prospect or the second prospect behind Wander Franco. And a lot of people expected him to hit the ground running and just be, if not awesome right away, then be league average to maybe a little bit above league average almost immediately. He absolutely was not. And I think Jeff had mentioned that his contact skills and zone contact skills were, I wonder if we're going to hear stories about Joe Adell getting LASIK in the off season levels bad. It would appear as though he's a little bit better this year, but still striking out a third of the time in AAA is troubling. I wonder if the five category contributions that we thought were possible from him are now going to be 3.5, which, and the half is the stolen bases, because it's hard to project people doing that, it seems like, these days. If you're projecting stolen bases, then Joe Adell's a good guy to project with. So maybe it's 3.75 categories. But I'm almost at the point where I'm going to be skeptical of any sort of batting average moving forward. What are your thoughts about how he started his AAA season, and do you think he fits into that category of that, like we were talking about with Vlad?
Well, I don't know if he can all of a sudden be as good as Vlad, but he obviously has the skills to do it, right? But so the biggest thing, I guess there are two big things for me when it comes to Adell. I'm not as worried about his batting average, and it's not because I think he's going to be somebody who hits 300. I'm not as worried about his batting average because I actually think that it's important to contextualize what he's doing with the rest of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the league can't hit. And it's obviously because of the baseball, right? It's because of some of the things that we've been talking about in terms of pitchers kind of using max effort. It's some of the things about the seams happening. It's the lighter baseball. It's a lot of things that we, you know, have talked about a lot. But at the same time, I do think it's important to remember that, like, the league average strikeout rate for a hitter right now is almost 25%.
Mm-hmm.
The league average hitter is hitting .237. Like,
seem to be moving on what's an acceptable strikeout rate for the roster. Like, it used to be like, he strikes out 25% of the time. I guess we can handle that. Now it's definitely 30 and has been creeping up above that as to, oh, he strikes out over 30%, but that, you know, we can handle it.
Well, and it's like, yes, he might strike out 33% of the time, but, like, what does he do the other times, right? Like, that's a little bit what's becoming more important.
He hits dingers.
Yeah, and, like, you know, Jeff was saying, well, apparently, you know, Joe Adell only hits homers now, which, that'll play.
Yeah.
And obviously there are questions about how much you can get to the power. There's obviously huge bust potential, but at the same time, like, I don't know. You've got somebody like, we were just talking about Jorge Soler before we were starting, who can't hit 200 and he's struggling to hit for power, but, like, people still believe in that because he's been able to do it at the big league level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joe Adell still has the capability to be able to hit for power, be dynamic. And it, to me, shows how great Guerrero's been.
Yeah.
But I'm not as worried about, you know, a 33% strikeout rate doesn't scare me as much. It would have scared me in 2015.
I think it scares me more that it's in AAA than if he would have a 33% strikeout rate in the big leagues.
Yeah, but everybody in AAA is also throwing 96.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's in order to even get to AAA these days, you have to, you know, you have to be 96 in a slider. All of those guys, like, all we see all these people just cycling between AAA and the big leagues, where it's like, oh, look, the Brewers called up Justin Topa. He's throwing 98. And everyone's like, I don't even know who that is. And you're like, he's down in AAA. Like, obviously there are going to be some soft tossers down there. And some of it is going to be quality of breaking stuff. Some of it's going to be the ability to, you know,
command the zone, and like I'm saying stuff that are obvious, and I'm not I'm not trying to say that there's not a gap between AAA and the majors, because there is, especially in the quality and consistency of the pitchers. But at the same time, like he's doing it against guys who are still throwing big league quality stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's not to say that I think that Adele can absolutely make the jump and he's going to be able to do it seamlessly. I just, I'm skeptical that a lot of these things, I think that we are stuck, and we, I mean, as a fantasy community, not you and me, though we are part of that, is I've been thinking about, like, it does seem to me a lot of the language we use and a lot of the metrics we use in terms of, you know, what means somebody strikes out a lot, all of these things, it doesn't seem like we've really kind of moved past 2015. We've done it on the pitching side. We've done this on the pitching side where we're just like, you know, this kind of strikeout rate isn't that impressive anymore. Mm-hmm. Or like this kind of ERA, not that impressive anymore.
These innings totals.
Yeah. And we have talked about how much we have to recalibrate what we've done on the pitching side. But for some reason, every single hitter is somehow expected to strike out 20% of the time and hit 280. Nobody's doing that. The league average hitter's hitting 237 with an almost 25% strikeout rate. Like that, and, you know, in 2015, that was a 20% strikeout rate, and they were hitting almost 260. Like, things have changed.
Yeah.
And so I'm not as worried about Adele in terms of being able to contribute at the big league level. I would say, like, if your batting average sucks, like mine does in, you know, this in our Rototina league, because I've got like six guys hitting under 200. Is Joe Adell going to help me, even though I've got him in the minors? I mean, probably not. But yeah, at the same time,
you should probably move him.
But at the same time, right? Like, I do want somebody else that you wanted to talk about as well. But you know, you've got your Taylor Wallses, you've got your Owen Millers, who have been coming up and making their big league contributions, or their big league debuts, excuse me. And like, those are guys who might be able to hit for some average. Like, maybe I want a Joey Wendell, like, who's been incredible. But Joe Adell can still contribute, and I do think we need to recalibrate that a little bit.
Yeah, and I just mentioned him as a guy who is a top 2-3 prospect that people were sort of souring on a little bit.
I think they still are.
Yeah. Another. So would Victor Robles be in this, or have we seen too much of Victor Robles at the big league level?
I mean, I don't know. It's a good question. I was thinking about Victor Robles, and I was like, it seems like he should be there, but at the same time, I'm like, look, he's going to have to, like, do a lot of things that we haven't even seen.
Yeah,
things have to change.
Yeah, I think I kind of made the personal decision that I was just kind of out on Robles before the season. Like, if he breaks through, that's awesome, and I'm happy for him. But I would not go near even the diminished price that it would cost to roster him or to trade for him or anything like that. I just don't see it, or haven't seen it, and don't see it in the near future. So
yeah, I mean,
that was another name that jumped to mind.
I mean, it's not a potential guy; it's somebody that was actually doing it. Mm-hmm. But you know, Byron Buxton is another guy that it was just like, we saw him kind of flash it, and yes, injuries are still an issue, but then all of a sudden it was like, kind of in 2019 in a little stint, but then certainly in 2020 and in 2021, and yes, I know there are walk issues, but it was just like, oh, well, all of a sudden, you know, Byron Buxton's going to hit 35 homers. Like, he's just decided that was a thing. It was a little bit like the whole myth behind Ichiro, where it was like, he could hit a home run whenever he wanted to. It was just like, Buxton was like, I'm going to do that now.
Yeah, that injury in particular was one of the most disappointing or demoralizing so far this season.
Yeah. So, I was trying to think, like, Bo Bichette seems kind of like that guy right now. But
yeah, I think Bo Bichette is still probably, I don't know if Bo Bichette has yet fallen to maybe where Vlad did in a like a redraft sense, or because I think he's still like a top 12 or so dynasty name.
Yeah, though I do think Bichette, if he doesn't, you know, if this year comes and he hits, you know, 260 with 20 homers, mm-hmm. people are going to say, well, you know, maybe he's just kind of, you know, he's solid.
Yeah.
Otani's kind of doing it this year that he doesn't really fit the mold.
I mean, does he ever?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
So maybe, and this is, maybe this is a similar name, but for different reasons, sort of going through the ringer, Keston Hira, I wanted to talk about because he's back with the Brewers. Just between last year and this year, the struggles were real, and a lot of them mm-hmm. were due to strikeouts, and a lot of them were due to not being able to make too much contact. He's back with the team after spending just about 10 games in AAA, and his AAA slash line could ostensibly just say, "Nah, I'm not going to stay here very long."
Yeah.
So yeah, 9 games, 438, 526, 906, 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases. And it's similar to what we were talking about with Adele. Like, he still struck out over 34% of the time. But like with Adele, that's a little bit more palatable when you look at it in a league context. You are the Brewers guy. I think that we've established that on this. What would you say would be a like right now, Keston Hira in 27 games, 159, 258, 268, and that includes his dreadful start to the season, of course. But if what sort of line, or let's say if the slate was wiped clean, what would you be looking at for Keston Hira for the rest of the season?
Like, what do I think he needs to hit for it to be a successful season, or what do I expect?
Both. Like, what do you think, what do you expect, and is that going to be a successful season?
I mean, I would expect him to hit probably 240, 250 with some power. And a part of that is because I still think that the strikeout issues are there, and and it's not just that the strikeout issues are there, it's like, Craig and I were talking about it when we were looking at some of his heat maps, and I was like, dude, if you get a fastball above the belt, you can't get to it. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's some swing issues, and it'll be interesting to see if some of that has changed. I think he gave an interview Sunday or Monday, I don't remember what it was, a couple of things happened. Number one, apparently he was able to spend some time at home with his mom, who's battling cancer. So I think that is something that clearly was weighing on him and his family.
Yeah, sure.
And so we wish her obviously nothing but the best, and
yeah,
the best to the whole family. So that was like nice that the Brewers basically were like, you can go, like, why don't you go home for a bit?
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that came out in the interview was he was like, I got for the first time in, you know, he was like, I've been such a good hitter throughout my entire life. If I ever went through a slump, I just went and swung more, and I just eventually hit myself out of it. And he was like, this is the first time in my life that, like, I was having bad at bats and I didn't really know what to do. Where he was like, I didn't really have any like key point to go back to. I didn't, you know, it was just like, I'm really struggling for the first time in my life and I don't really know how to address it. And so he said one of the nice things about going to AAA was he still had some bad at bats, but actually, like, was able to work on things, had a better idea what was happening. He worked on it with some of the staff and had the freedom to kind of like sit back and address what was bad about the at-bat and go up and do something different next time. And he was like, I had a lot of success doing that. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes up and those really obvious holes, not just in the strikeout rate in a macro sense, but like in a micro sense of what he was particularly struggling with. It'll be interesting to see if those things change. Mm-hmm. I think in order for the rest of the season to be a success, or like, I think if he hits under 250 as a hitter, that's, I mean, with his hit tool coming up, with his ability in college, with his ability as a prospect, with his bat speed, all of those sorts of things, if he hits under 250, I think it's bad. Mm-hmm. Like in terms of like what kind of outcome you would like to be able to see. Yeah. And maybe some things have changed with the ball, and you know, those are things that we don't really have knowledge of. But at the same time, you know, to the point, like 2019, he was striking out 31% of the time and hit 19 homers, hit .303 and almost 350 plate appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that was with a massive BABIP. But at the same time, even if you had some of that come down, what, he's hitting 260, 270 with 19 homers?
Yeah, like, nine steals too, which would be really helpful if he starts to get on base a little bit more and run.
Yeah. So I like this year, I'm a little bit, I'd like to see some things change before I think he's going to hit above 250 throughout the rest of the year. And it's just too early to know. But obviously, being able to see him take a walk, and I think he had a single in his first day back. And against Blake Snell. So he's obviously had more success against lefties throughout his entire career. So, you know, we'll see how that's going. I think the single came against Snell. It was either that or Miguel Diaz. I can't remember.
Yeah, and he smoked it too. Like, it was 105 exit velocity.
Which, you know, he'll do that. Mm-hmm. So I just really need to see some of the stuff kind of change. I think the biggest thing that's really been shocking is that his zone contact rate has just plummeted over the past 2 years. And I think that has, part of that is just an overall sense of what he was talking about in his interview on Sunday or Monday or whenever it was, where he was just like, for the first time, I just like didn't know what to do. And so I was able to take some time away, and hopefully he'll come back and be better for it.
Yeah. That's just gotta be one of the most helpless kind of feelings as a professional athlete, when you've just been so good your whole life, and then you all of a sudden you're like, oh, actually everyone's this good now, what do I do?
Well, and we normally talk about that, like guys facing that for the first time in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we talk about like what's going to happen when this prospect fails for the first time in the minors. Well, Hira didn't do that in the minors throughout the entire thing. The first time he failed was in the majors. And you could tell he was a little bit lost, but at the same time, you know, like, I just also think about the fact that pitching is a little bit different and hard to think about these days in terms of what is legit, kind of like bouncing back from. But like, you know, Corbin Burnes did this a couple of years ago where he was just so dreadful in 2019, and then, you know, suddenly he's potentially a front runner for the Cy Young.
As this season progresses, we should try and pick out the next, like, number one ace-level stud that the Brewers are going to have next year. Because it seems like they add one from their organization every season, and it's usually somebody that has been infuriating and not necessarily good previously. So, you know, we had Woodruff, obviously, and then Burnes joined him last year and has taken a leap, and now Freddy Peralta this year. So who's it going to be next year? Is something that we're going to have to... Is Brett Anderson still with the team? Do you think he can make the leap?
He is. I mean, from his own admission, no. He's just like, I can't do a lot of stuff I used to be able to do.
Yeah, so I think that's we'll have to kind of keep an eye on the Brewers, and we'll start making some selections on who's going to be their next stud ace that strikes out everyone as the season progresses. So
I was going to say, they're going to need to find somebody who can like throw multiple innings, because otherwise our answer right now is Brent Suter.
Trevor Richards, man. I guess.
When you were
out last week and I told you that the Brewers got Trevor Rogers, I'm sure that you were excited for a minute.
Oh, I was really confused. Like, when you told me that they got Trevor Rogers, and, like, I was like, oh, so they made two deals. Because, you know, you were like, oh, they made a trade. And I was like, holy crap, that's interesting. And I like, well, Willy Adames.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they got Adames, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And you were like, oh, and Trevor Rogers. And I was like, oh, so they made two deals. And so, like, I went to MLB Trade Rumors, and I was just, like, looking, and I was like, I can't find the second deal. And I was like, what are you talking about? and then eventually,
I don't even know if the Brewers have anybody that they would, that the Marlins would trade Trevor Rogers for.
And that was, like, the thing is, I was just like, how?
Yeah.
Like, who did they give up? And, like, I thought it was, like, you know, the first thing that came to my mind was, I was like, did they trade, like, Hura? Did they move, like, Hura for Adamas and like, in some weird three-team deal?
Yeah, and the Rays gave him, like, Vidal Bruhan, or...
I was like, I don't... Yeah, it was really bizarre. And then I saw Richards, and I was like, oh, he was interesting a couple of years ago before he went to the Rays.
That makes more sense. Yeah. So, yeah, my early pick is Trevor Richards. We'll stay tuned for any sort of changes in our decision to who's going to be the next Brewers ace.
Well, and it fits your mold perfectly, right? Because former Marlins guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's going to be tough for you to resist. The only thing that would be different is if he somehow was on the Angels.
Yeah, that would be... Well... Yeah, well, it'd be a little less rational. Like, his arm would still not be attached to his body.
And I suppose he'd have a hard time breaking out for the Brewers if he was on the Angels.
Yeah. Let's hit one last recalibration before maybe we speed through some call-ups. I want to talk about a slugger in Chicago, and it's one that Tony La Russa has called a very solid individual. He doesn't celebrate anything too early. He works. He grinds. Competes. I think his mind, his attitude, his character is the best part of him. That's saying a lot. He's got a great head. Now, if I were to give you a 50-50, do you think he's talking about Yermin Mercedes or Andrew Vaughn?
I already know the answer to
that. Yermin, who is, if not leading the league in hitting... At least in the top, he's at least into the discussion for best batting average of the league.
Yeah, I suspect that old La Russa is talking about one Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah, so Andrew Vaughn's full season stat line still doesn't look very good, but yep. as of late, he's starting to hit the ball out of the ballpark and is starting to, for lack of a better word, mash a little bit.
I mean, I thought so, and then I was like looking at his numbers and I was like, he's actually been kind of not good. I mean, he's like hitting for a lot of power, and I think that's what's starting to change, is he's like actually starting to hit for power. But I was looking at it and I was just like, oh, in May, I wonder if he's just like absolutely been on a tear. And I was like, oh, his on-base percentage is under 300 in May. Okay. And I was like, when did he get hot? And I was like, oh, for the last 2 days.
Yeah, so he's really starting to come on. Yeah. No, but his four home runs, his four
home runs that he's had this season.
Yeah, so... And he's not doing much else other than hitting home runs, but...
As we just talked about with Joe Adell, though, that'll play.
Yeah, okay, so this is the non-analytic statistical... I don't know, have anything to base this on other than, you know, he's looking better. Like, when you watch his at-bats, and I'll find myself, if I'm mad at Cleveland, which is quite often... Or if there's not a good pitching matchup on that I want to check out, I'll just watch the White Sox because I love their broadcast team so much.
Yeah, that's fair. They got Len Caster now, right?
No, it's I think he's on the radio, but it's Benetti, okay. It's Benetti and Stone, and they're and he's it seemed like Stone was like on the verge of becoming a little curmudgeon-y when Hawk was still there a few years back, and. Jason Benetti has just kind of pulled him out of like he was doing improv games last night and it was just wild like listening to Steve Stone but it was cool. So I watched them a lot and Vaughn is starting to look comfortable even though it hasn't been reflected in anything other than his home runs.
Yeah. Well, and so, he's also starting to very clearly by his playing time starting to actually earn the trust of his manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that quote is, as long as he doesn't like get too much launch angle on his bat after making contact, he should be okay on that front.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he seemed like a guy that would have been trending in the Vlad direction, not to that same level because people were talking about generational talent offensively with Vlad, and nobody was saying that about Vaughn, but they were saying that he was going to be a very, very good professional hitter. And based on the bat signal questions, based on the emails and the questions that we got here on Tino, there was a lot of concern about Vaughn heading into this season and in the early goings of 2021. So you know, you just have to be patient with some of these guys, and sometimes they'll turn into Vlad. A lot of times they won't come close, but it does seem like Vaughn might be shaking out of it a little bit.
Well, and it turns out sometimes you need a little bit of time, but it's also something that this is something that you flagged prior to the year. Is how much was he going to really struggle with trying to adapt to a whole new position as well? Not just adapting to the big leagues, but also adapting to playing left field. And obviously, he's bouncing between left field and, he plays right field once in a while, but also first base. And very clearly to me, he's just starting to show enough that he's getting to play regularly for pretty much the first time.
Mm-hmm. And to circle back to Hira, like Hira is playing first base now and hadn't done that before, so it's hard to kind of factor all this stuff in.
Yeah, and we didn't have Andrew Vaughn giving interviews being like, I'd struck out at the plate, and I was like, they were like, what happened? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on. So he's not given those kind of red flags yet.
Let's hit a few call-ups. You mentioned Owen Miller and Taylor Walls. Owen Miller for Cleveland is, he's only been up for two games. He was just destroying AAA. He was hitting over 400, and slugging over 600. And you're not gonna believe it, but the Cleveland offense was not very good before Franmil Reyes got injured. So a lot of people were talking about where's Owen Miller, and I don't really think Owen Miller has ever had that sort of profile where he was projecting to be plus. But when your team is clamoring for Owen Miller to be your savior, something has gone awry. That's where Cleveland has been.
Yeah, Cleveland's had a rough one for like a few years offensively. Yeah. But I will say at least, so there was a time, I'll say half dozen years ago, where Brewers fans were clamoring for Nate Orff to come up from
AAA. Save us, Nate Orff.
Yeah, because he was hitting like 320 or something in AAA, and everyone was like, yeah. And turns out he came up in like for like a week. So Owen Miller is better than Nate Orff. Hopefully. Are we just in a position in which we're looking at Owen Miller as somebody who is... I don't know. Your like best case scenario is,
So I was gonna say to call back to somebody that you've mentioned offhandedly. I would say that he projects to maybe be a worse Joey Wendell.
Yeah, I was because I thought about that as well, and I was like, Joey Wendell's starting to hit for some power.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like when we were looking at kind of your Jake Cronenworths, or it was like back when we were saying obviously he's not going to run quite as much, but your Ben Zobrist of the world, or even like Logan Forsyth. He's a good solid citizen who's going to play a lot of different positions, and you're like, can you come up and hit 280 with 10 to 12 homers?
Yeah, that's what you're hoping for, I think, ultimately with Owen Miller. So I would be more interested in The other guy that we had mentioned, Taylor Walls. It was really funny to watch Twitter after the Adames trade to Milwaukee, because everyone was like, "Uh-oh, here comes Wander. It's about ready to happen." And Jeff Ponce over at Prospects Live, and then we both made the same joke at the same time that it was going to be Taylor Walls' season. And
I mean, to be fair, though, you have been talking about that for, what, 4 weeks?
Yeah, I think I wrote about it during the shortstop preview piece for Prospects, is that Walls, we're dreaming on Wander, but we were going to get Walls. So I don't think that that's a bad thing. He's a really good defender, and all through the minors, he's stolen a lot of bases. He's hit for some power. Like, he seems as if he could be the Owen Miller, but with speed, and that can play shortstop and is better at making contact. So I don't know where that puts him, but if we're using guys that we just talked about to make comps, I would be more interested in rostering Walls for 2020, definitely, even if he has probably a shorter leash, or assumedly, I don't know what the Rays are planning on with Wander, but you would think that Walls would have a shorter leash than Miller.
I would assume so, just because obviously Cleveland is kind of scrambling for absolutely anything. But at the same time, like, you never really know what Cleveland's going to do.
What, Cleveland or Tampa?
Cleveland. Right? Because, like, a lot of the time it just feels like, you know, at the beginning of the year it was like, why
here's Ben Gamble.
Well, like, why isn't Ahmed Rosario getting more time in center?
Yeah.
Like, who you have in center is not any good. And they're like, well, I'm not sure that Ahmed Rosario is any good. And you're like, you traded for him. Like, let him play. But, you
know, after a couple months, a little bit of time to think about it, I'm willing to admit that I think the Francisco Lindor trade might have been a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see, right? I mean, you still got Andrés Giménez, and what, you've got Francisco Lindor
Isaiah sitting Green.
There, hit, you know, you've got Francisco Lindor costing a lot of money and hitting under 200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, who's to say? Who's to say?
I guess TBD, won't make too many judgments yet.
Yeah, I think Taylor Walls just feels like he's somebody who's going to be up for about another month and then is going to be in a platoon role somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because I mean, you've got both Franco and Brujan coming.
Yeah, he's a switch hitter though, so he might get a little bit more rope. And it wouldn't shock me now that we are starting to see what some of these call ups are. It wouldn't surprise me to see if Brujan is in the outfield, because that's where he's been spending the majority of his time in AAA.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I also wonder if Taylor Walls ends up getting traded for a reliever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we said that last time. Nick Wickram for Taylor Walls.
And what we didn't realize, it was going to be Willy Adames for two relievers.
Yeah. I think we should mention real quick, tomorrow from when we're recording this, Alek Manoah is going to be starting for the Blue Jays, which should be pretty fun. He has just been dominating at AAA. Whether that continues, we will see. But he pretty much was eclipsing Nate Pearson at every step, at least statistically. So we'll see how he is able to handle major league hitters, but I'm excited to watch him pitch in the big leagues.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, and obviously I'm not going to go into my thoughts on Manoah, because we did that in the last episode, where it was just like, obviously right now it's going well, and I think in a redraft league you should absolutely go for Manoah. It's just a question of like how likely I think it is to continue. But at the same time, I mean, right now, let's say in Dynasty, you have the opportunity for free to get either Alek Manoah or Nate Pearson. Who do you want?
Manoah.
Yeah, that's what I think a lot of people are saying. And like, Pearson was, what, top 75 Dynasty prospect two months ago?
I just don't, like, I think he ultimately is probably a really good reliever. Like, I just don't see the strikeouts in a starter's role for him.
But at the same time, is that just because we, like, have seen him struggle a little bit in the big leagues and deal with injuries, and, like, we just haven't really seen Manoah do anything yet?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I don't know. It just feels like, right? Because, I mean, obviously the strikeouts have long been an issue for Pearson. It's always been a little bit more projection based on that. But he's obviously striking guys out in AAA now. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't know which one I would take. I mean, I think if I'm really being honest with myself, and this is a podcast in which we do advocate for being honest with yourself.
Yeah, most of the time.
Unless it makes you feel better, and then right. Don't be.
Sure.
I don't know if I'd really like either of them. yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, let's hit the Benjamin Bailey of the week, and then we'll get out of here. So, I pulled Benjamin Bailey as a flyer after he, as a 17-year-old in rookie league, he hit .324, .477, .454, 10 stolen bases, walked more than he struck out, and I was like, that is pretty cool. Maybe he's going to be a guy. And it was exclusively on the stat line, not listening to anybody that is smart or actually watches these rookie league guys play. Maybe I'm being a little bit hard on that pick because he was getting some traction this offseason, but still, he's not very good so far this year, but he's 19 in A ball. We'll see how he does, but it also gave me some inspiration to have this segment, and it's the Benjamin Bailey of the week, and it's just a guy that you are scrolling through the stat page and you're like, huh, that's pretty good. I haven't really heard a ton about him so far. And this week's Benjamin Bailey of the week is Junkensie Noel for the Cleveland baseball team. He's a first base prospect.
Sorry, I didn't realize that we were only having one. I thought we were having one apiece. Got it.
Oh, okay, yeah, good. we can have one apiece if you want to find one, or you can just take the keys next week and you'll be responsible for your Benjamin Bailey of the week next time.
No, it's good. I've got one too, but I'm all about this. No, let's talk about Noel first. I want to hear about Noel.
So Junkensie Noel, he's a first base prospect. He's 19 and is dominating level A right now. He has 5 home runs in 15 games. He's striking out under 17% of the time, hitting .358, slugging .672, walking no thanks. But when you're mashing like that, who really cares about walks? Because when it comes down to it, we're looking for dingers. We're not looking for stupid walks that kill rallies. So Junkensie Noel, 19 years old, an interesting shout. Like, I hadn't even heard his name until writing the first base prospects get to know in the offseason. And he was one that I was kind of like looking out for and has been really good so far this year. So if you can pick, if you have room, maybe pick him up. If not, toss him on the watch list and see how he progresses. Because the first base only prospects are not usually a good time, but you know, some of them hit. So what are you gonna do?
So I am going to go with somebody that actually isn't as statistically impressive, which maybe goes against the, you know. Maybe goes against what we're trying to do here.
We're making up the rules as we go along for this. Yeah. So,
but this is somebody who just like completely wasn't on my radar earlier this year, and somebody who I'm actually interested in now.
Yeah.
And it's somebody that I'm interested in not because I really know a lot about him, but it's Jordan Diaz with Oakland, and he is a 20-year-old third base prospect who's maybe going to move to first base, judging by the couple of reports that I was reading, who is, I believe, he is the youngest player in high A. I'm not 100% positive on that, but he is right in lockstep with what Oakland's been doing with a lot of their international, like young international guys. They've just been pushing them hard. Mm-hmm. We talked about that with Brian Welbus. We talked about that with Robert Poisson, and Jordan Diaz is somebody who is all of a sudden up. He's got an ISO of .316. He's hitting .263. He's got 5 homers in just his first 14 games, is a 20-year-old in high A, somebody who's looking like he can hit for some power. He's not striking out a bunch. He's never struck out more than 17% in his minor league career thus far. And so being able to look at somebody like that and say, does he have the power to stick at first base if he has to move over? I don't know. Does he have the ability to walk a ton? Not necessarily sure. But he's showing right now that he's got, you know, an advanced approach in terms of what most people have at 20 years old. It's advanced not for a big leaguer, but advanced for a 20-year-old in high A. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But looking at a couple of the scouting reports, they just say he's kind of a bigger, stockier guy who might be a bat first, third base prospect if he can stick there, but not necessarily have power for the position. And boy, if it's like I need sometimes to have the Andy Diaz starter kit. And
how are the pipes? What's the bicep circumference?
That's what I need to know. I need to know somebody like. Yeah, it's like the biggest thing is when Yandy Diaz comes up and everyone is like, that dude is going to hit bombs. And he goes, nah, man, I'm going to hit 300 with a bunch of singles. Yeah, that's my game.
I'm going to just beat the ball into the ground and it's going to be really hard, but it's not going to go in the air.
Yep. And so, but Jordan Diaz is actually somebody who I took a flyer on in some league. Maybe it was a Tino one. But the other one that I just wanted to bring up, but this is actually, I know doesn't fit the brief, but I just wanted to kind of call people's attention to it because I don't necessarily, I'm a little bit out of the loop over the past week, but I'm not 100% sure people are talking about him yet, is Michael Harris with Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And he is coming up, he's hitting 359 as a 20-year-old in high A as well. He's hitting for a little bit of power, he's stealing some bases, he's got a little bit of swing and miss, but he's somebody who's got kind of the overall skill set across the board that you can hit a little bit, has got a little bit of power, has got some speed, and it was a third round draft pick from 2019 and showed out a little bit in rookie ball before getting a jump to A ball and really tanking. Didn't really hear much about him in 2020. In 2021, he's coming out and just absolutely hitting the cover off the ball. And has kind of a fringy profile in which you're like, I can see this working at the major league level. So I am much more interested in Michael Harris than I was, say, 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's a good shout. We'll have more Benjamin Baileys of the week next week, and we will be back next week with more Tino goodness. Welcome back to JP after a week away. Welcome back to us after a week away because I couldn't, you know, get my shit together to do a show. So check us out next week. Thanks for your patience. Thanks for listening. You guys are the coolest. We'll catch you next time.